Today on One Question, how do you get the most out of your Peloton experience?
Hi guys, I'm Jen Sherman, senior instructor at Peloton Cycle.
Hi, my name is Matt Wilpers. I'm a new instructor here, and I'm very excited to be at Peloton.
Hi, I'm Emma Lovewell.
And I'm Dennis Morton, and we're super excited to be your newest Peloton instructors.
My name's Rebecca Kennedy, and I'm a Peloton tread instructor.
Five.
Just crush that. Tap into that inner fighter, y'all. Peloton, this is your moment.
Bring it. 20 seconds, come on.
So you've got a question, and Paul Testa and myself, Tim DeLoisio, we have answers. Welcome to the One Question Podcast. I'm Tim DeLoisio. We've got Paul Testa. Paul, today's topic is the Peloton bike and how do you get the most out of your Peloton experience? I could say for myself, my family first got the bike in 2015 and it has become a staple of our fitness regimen and in many different ways over the last 5 years. And I know, Paul, you yourself are also a Peloton enthusiast.
I am a Peloton enthusiast and I've had mine since, believe it or not, right around, we're in like a 2 to 3 day window. It's passed. I can't remember if I got it on the 17th or the 18th of July of 2017, but I just passed my 3rd year anniversary with the Peloton.
And, you know, I think a lot of people, their perceptions of Peloton from the TV commercials or, you know, social media is it's a really expensive stationary bike. And, you know, it's hard to justify that kind of expense. But it's kind of cool. It's got cool technology. And then a lot of people might think that it's a little bit annoying, right? It's one of those things where people always talk about it and, you know, it's just, you know, something that they might not feel is right for them. And I would say to everybody that I don't know that there's anyone that I wouldn't recommend checking out the Peloton technology, whether it be the bike, the app, the courses, the instruction, and just giving it a try and seeing what you think for yourself. And most of the people that I've talked to about it have really been pleasantly surprised and have found a way to incorporate it into their lives. And the amazing thing, Paul, that I think about the company and the technology, and I promise this won't be a total infomercial, but the amazing thing is that everyone's experience with the product is unique and their own and different, but that there's a great community about being a Peloton user that, you know, holds people together at the same time.
And a community that's growing by the day. I mean, there's just more and more people that are buying these bikes specifically within the pandemic, or whether it's the bike, the tread, or using the app, but there's just a lot more users. I mean, I think you said 2015, me 2017. It was a lot different back then than it is today. I mean, it was just the bike back then. The metrics that were in the system were not the same as they are today. It's just as a company, it's growing, and it is. It's a great product, and I would recommend it as well to most people. I think you came down in 2017 to visit me, and I didn't know you had a Peloton. It's just something we never talked about in that 2 years that you had, or maybe you mentioned it and I just forgot. But at some point around 16, 17, the commercials started coming out more and more. And we were sitting down having dinner. I was like, I'm thinking I'm going to get a Peloton. And you were like, I have a Peloton. And we just had this whole conversation in regards to it. And then you were like, Paul, but you don't ride a bike and you don't do this. Like, why do you want it? And then we asked your lovely wife, Jen, for some input. And she thought I was stupid to spend that money and without ever trying it. But it was just something in my heart that I felt like I would really, really enjoy. My experience was a little different with the buying. I came across a seller that was really an aggressive selling price on it. Got a like new bike. And I was like, it's perfect. And within a month, I said, if this used bike that I bought at a very good rate broke, I would order a Peloton the next day at full price. Like, that's how much I loved it.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. I mean, if the, God forbid, this bike technology went obsolete for some reason and you could no longer use it. Now, the great thing is the bike itself is really well built and it's frictionless, and the bike itself is not likely to break beyond repair or become obsolete. The technology might. I know you and I have both had to replace the tablets, as we had original model tablets. And as with any piece of technology, over time, the software demands outgrow the current hardware. But that's something you can swap in without rebuying the entire bike and install yourself. And I thought that was, you know, it was more than I wanted to spend on, you know, on to keep the bike active, but it was something I was happy to spend.
Yeah, and I think another thing to point out is, like, when things like that happen, the company seems to offer its community a rebate or you know, some sort of a discount to purchase it. We did get it at a significantly reduced rate than, like, say someone had broke their tablet and needed to buy a new one.
Absolutely. I found that generally the experience in purchasing, installing, and support has been really good for a company that's growing as fast as they have been. That's, you hear a lot of pitfalls for companies on the service and support side that grow this quickly. They just can't keep up with the demand. Also, the product, you know, luckily, it was built really well. I mean, they really nailed the manufacturing. I think the amount of problems that people are having with the bike are not significant. I mean, every product has defaults and issues, but it's not like there's been class action worthy, you know, problems with these machines. And so, I would say that they've done an excellent job as a company growing a community. And, you know, we've gone this far and we haven't mentioned the instructors, which, to me, the thing that really drives the heart of this company is the relationship that you develop with these instructors. And it's a relationship. You feel, I mean, I don't know, I feel like that they're training me, because I've now fine-tuned, and we'll talk about this, I fine-tuned the types of rides that I like, the schedule that I like, the, you know, I can program via the on-demand, you know, rides, the schedule that I need based on input that they've given over time is a good schedule for me. And it feels like, it really does feel like customized training. And if you follow them on social platforms, you're getting tips and tricks and things that almost feels like they're talking to you. They're coaching you through your, you know, your day, your physical journey, your mental journey. They've become in some ways a life coach for me, which was totally unexpected. I had the privilege of meeting a couple in the New York studios or at the Boston, the showroom here in Natick. And I think that just adds to that experience for me. So I want to say the technology, the hardware is great, but the people that are the face of the company, the instructors, are really phenomenal people.
They're amazing. I mean, it doesn't, you could not purchase this bike and not find a group of four or five instructors that would be your go-to. You know, probably two to three, you know, is where you'll normally go. But I mean, you can expand it out to five. Like, you know, a new ride came out from so-and-so, and the person that I usually do rides from didn't do one. I'm going to take this one. And you're confident. And then, you know, like anything, with any type, there will be instructors that you maybe aren't crazy about. But you know what? There are a bunch of people that like that instructor. And that's the thing. There's just a major variety of the instructors. You can have strict formatted rides. You can have fun rides where, you know, there's a more like a dance party versus a ride. That's what I would consider. Though I tend to not go towards those ones. But it doesn't mean every once in a while, like, you know, you and I both do Power Zone training. We both love it. We love all the Power Zone trainers that are out there and do those rides. But every once in a while, you know, once or twice a week, I like to do a classic rock ride. I just like to just go out there and just, you know, listen to what they have to say, but just kind of let loose and just have a nice ride with good music.
Well, and I think, so let's go over for those that aren't familiar, right? The different types of rides and things that you might experience on a Peloton bike. First, you've got your shorter, your high intensity interval, your Tabata, your 20, 30 minute rides, which are, you know, interval based. Usually, you know, it's a more poppy or, you know, EDM type music. And you're really getting your heart rate running fast, and then you're pulling it back, and then you're pushing it again. And, you know, I know a lot of people that that's the core of what they do on the bike. And that's not my experience, right? Those are not the rides I gravitate towards. I'll throw them in, is sometimes to change it up if I'm in a little bit of a rut. I also tend to stay away from rides that use the arm weights in them. I'd rather spend my 30 to 45 minutes doing cardio and, you know, working on power and strength in the legs, and take my, you know, upper body workouts off the bike, using Peloton strength classes or, you know, free weights, things like that. So that's just how I experience it. But a lot of other people, really like the intervals and arms rides because it allows them to get a little bit of upper body work in, where they might not otherwise prioritize it. Right. So you go from your interval based classes, then you've got your really fun classes, your rhythm and rock classes, your live DJ classes. These are really more about the music and the experience that goes along with the ride. And you're getting resistance and cadence call outs throughout the ride, to keep you, on pace, but you're not going in with a very specific structure. You're just following the rhythm of the music and, listening to the playlist that the instructors put together and listening to them coach you through the ride. And then you've got more structured power zone training, which, for those of you that aren't familiar with cycling, power is the metric of energy that you're delivering through the pedals, for lack of a more, technical definition. And, that's measured by the Peloton bike. As your resistance and cadence goes up, that power number goes up, and you have levels of power that are based on your aerobic and anaerobic capacity, right? So that you try and hit, that's going to give you like an endurance level at a level 1 or 2 in your power zone training, all the way up through a 7, which is going to be max effort, right? You're really pushing short bursts of high cardio. And the power zone training is really meant to grow your ability to sustain power on the bike over a longer period of time. And that's the same methodology that your Tour de France cyclists use, your triathletes, your Olympic cyclists. And so it's very scientific based, but allows you to see performance gains over time. So to me, did I miss any types of rides, Paul? I tried to hit them all there.
No, I mean, well, there's heart rate, training as well. I don't think you mentioned that.
That's true.
With the theme rides, but a very good job, Professor DeLoisio, there explaining the power zone training.
I think you took this course from
a 101 right to the 400 level for the people out there.
Let's listen to Matt Wilpers for a second. Here's our power zone, one of Paul and I's favorite instructors, who's kind of the would you call him the guru of power zone training? He was kind of the one that
he brought it to the table, Peloton, right?
Right. So here's Matt introing one of his rides, and then we'll play a rhythm intro after that from Jen Sherman, and you can hear the difference in the two.
What is up, Peloton? Matt Wilpers, thanks for coming. This is a 45-minute power zone endurance ride. It's going to be a lovely ride. We're going to warm up for about 11 minutes, and we're going to our main set, we have 2 4-minute intervals, 2 3-minute intervals, 2 2-minute intervals. Intervals will be at zone 3. Recoveries will be 3 minutes at zone 2 in between each interval. This is an endurance ride. We're focusing on improving aerobic endurance today, all right? So let's have a good time.
So there you can hear, there's a plan and a structure to that class. You know what you're getting into. You know how hard you're going to have to push. An endurance ride in power zone basically means you're not going to push the highest levels of your power, but you're going to be at a good effort for a considerable amount of those 45 minutes. And I know those are some of my
right. In a case like that, 11 minute warm up, you're going to be in it. you know, you're going to be at a level for 34 minutes straight. You know, with
and that's what, you know, endurance break. Means you're not getting those breaks, right? You're really trying to drive the length of time that you can sustain a pretty good, you know, interval of effort. And, you know, for me, those are, it's definitely a go-to ride for me at least once or twice a week is those 30 or 45 minute power zone endurance rides, because, you know, I run a lot outside, which we'll talk about with some of Peloton's other classes that they've grown into their arsenal. But I find I do more of my high impact training out on the road, especially at our advanced age, Paul. Our bodies don't respond as well to the rough and tumble road running as they used to. So I like the cycling to be a little bit less impact, and kind of blend recovery and endurance. And so those classes are absolutely a go-to for me, you know, throughout the week.
And that for me, that's what motivates me to get onto the bike, with Peloton, is how Matt laid out that class that I got on that bike. I hit play. I know what the structure of I know what type of ride I'm getting into, but he just explains everything over the 30 minutes, like how long you're going to be in each specific zone. And for me, that makes, I say, okay, I can do this. And this is how I can plan for what's coming. And that's what I love about it. And that's what I've gravitated towards.
And then you could hear, here's a Jen Sherman, one of the first instructors at Peloton, and someone that I think almost everyone should be able to relate to if they ride with. I think she's got great personality. She, you know, has, you know, really good perspective on, you know, on life and fitness in general. And, you know, her music choices, you know, for me are usually spot on. But here's Jen Sherman rhythm intro, and maybe you can catch some of the differences.
Resistance, 40-45. Find a little rhythm with me. A cadence of 70-75.
So there she's calling out a resistance and a cadence that matches the rhythm of the song. And then each song, that's going to change. And as you ride, she's gonna cue the music and then cue the cadence, which means the how quickly your pedals are going to the beat of the music. And so some people that I know really can't ride without staying their cadence, keeping their cadence to the rhythm. When they're off beat, it's much more difficult for them. And so those rhythm rides, I think, are, you know, for me, they're fun, but for a lot of people, that's what motivates them to want to get onto the bike, is to connect with the instructor and the music that way.
Yeah. And this goes to like my absolute lack of knowledge when it comes to rhythm, or like I can, like they say, well, you know, the rhythm of this song's at 96. And I'm like, how did they figure that out? Like, what, like to
you're
me,
like,
it's
you're like Elaine
the same...
on the dance floor, Paul.
Yeah. I'm just like, whatever. Okay. So I'm going to do 96, but I don't feel if they didn't tell me the number, there's no way that I would guess it correctly.
You never played the drums, Paul?
Never played the drums.
No.
Other thing that I'll say about the music, specifically because, I follow Matt, I mean, I do a lot of Matt rides, and it is so structured. And some, I find myself, like, I hear the beginnings of the songs and the ends of the songs, but I don't hear anything else in between. Like, I'm just so focused on what I'm doing, but I can hear the start, like, oh, there's something new, and then I hear something winding down. I'm like, oh, something's winding down. But I couldn't go through, finish a ride, have you call me within 2 minutes, and then say, what songs did they play on that? I would have no clue.
No,
even though I know the songs.
I would agree that sometimes it is totally in the background, and then there are some rides where it's totally in the forefront. And I think what's great is, you know, not only can each person really customize what their experience with the bike is by the types of rides and instructors that they choose, but that you can vary it over time, and you can just, you know, like, look, fitness is hard. It's something that you have to do consistently over a long period of time to, you know, to really feel confident about. And to do that, you can easily get yourself stuck in a mental and or physical rut, right? Doing the same thing over and over and over again can get boring. It can get, you need to, you know, to change it up mentally, and the ability to just say, oh, today I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna take it easy. No expectations. This looks like a great playlist, and I've ridden with this person before once or twice. We'll give it a try. And sometimes those rides end up being some of my better output rides because I don't have the, you know, the pressure of expectation. I'm just kind of following the cues. And if I start to feel good, then I start to push above the cues a little bit. And the next thing you know, you realize they're asking you to push outside of comfort zones with cadence and resistance combinations, either in or out of the saddle, that you wouldn't have normally done. And you start to realize that you can do things that maybe you wouldn't have thought you could do for lengths of time that you wouldn't have expected to try.
One of the best feelings is just what, kind of what you said. There's a lot of times where the bike is right in front of me. Like, it's in my office. It's right in, I look at it all day and I know I'm going to get on it, but sometimes, like, I don't want to get on it. Like, you have that feeling like, oh, this is, you know, you're going to do it. And then you just go and you find a ride and you get on the bike. And my best rides are rides like that. Like, when I really struggle to get motivated to go on it. And then when you know, with the metrics, we talked about the metrics that are built into the bike and that you see, and you can see all of a sudden you can be 5 minutes into a ride and you'd be like, I got a shot to beat my personal record on this. Like, I'm starting off pretty good. I'm feeling pretty good. And then you just get this motivation factor, you know, so you started off from like dragging yourself onto the bike to setting a personal record. And that is what this type of bike, the metrics that you get, the feedback, instant feedback that you get, the music that's being played, the instructor that is guiding you, all that motivation is just there right in front of your face the entire time for the 30, 45 minutes, hour, however long your ride is.
And I think the other thing that we haven't talked a lot about is the leaderboard, right? So you've got a live leaderboard of everybody that has taken the class or is taking the class. And personally, when I first started on the bike, that was really important to me, right? I just kept pushing up that leaderboard as the ride would go on, I'd start to see people that were around me and maybe they would go above or beyond, you know, or I'd pass them, they'd pass me, and I'd be like, all right, well, I'm not gonna let that person pass me again. And I really cue into that more so than what the instructors were coaching. And I actually think at the very beginning of, you know, a lot of the instructors' kind of relationships teaching these classes this way, they weren't quite as adept at it, right? So they relied on a little bit more of that leaderboard motivation. And I think as they got better coaching over time, that became, for me, something that suddenly became less important because I was more focused on what they were asking me to do and why and how, than just pushing the leaderboard. And I also got to know, for me personally, what was a good bar, an excellent bar, a personal record, right? Like, and I could basically compete against myself without seeing it right there on the screen. Now, I know there's a lot of type A personalities that live and die on that leaderboard, right? You hear a lot of the professional athletes, and there's a ton of professional athletes that use the bike. They're always, you know, talking about their spot on the leaderboard vis-a-vis, you know, other people they know, or just trying to climb as high as they can. You can see that competitive nature. So I don't know. Do you have any more thoughts? Any thoughts about the leaderboard and how it impacts?
So I love the leaderboard for several reasons. Not a little bit of type A, but I know I'm never going to be number one, right? So it's just facts. Like, I mean, that's how it is. But I can compete against you, and I'm not really competing against you. I'm measuring myself against you because, you know, I'm looking there. But I can also, like with Power Zone in particular, everyone's kind of in a range. So those leaderboards don't really shift very often. Like, you know, you're going to fall where you're going to fall pretty much all the rides because you're working off of your training. I will say this to you bastards out there. When you're doing when you're here now and we are in a Power Zone ride and we finally get to that 1 minute, you know, where we can just pedal easy and cool down, when you're still racing, trying to get past me, don't make me go that last minute. I treasure that last minute, but I'm not going to let you pass me. It's not going to happen. So just back off. Do what Matt says. Bring it down to 25 resistance. Pedal it in 80 cadence. Let's just coast home, fellas. God.
There's nothing that worse than you get on a low impact ride, 20-minute low impact ride you're taking maybe is like a cool down ride, and then you know, if you were to scroll up to the top of the leaderboard that someone's using it as their FTP test, they're going all out for 20 minutes just to hit the top of the leaderboard. I mean, I mentioned time and time again how the relationship and the experience with the bike is unique to the rider, right? Like, and everyone experiences it differently. And the leaderboard is one way. I'll give you another way. Live classes versus on demand. I almost exclusively ride on demand unless I happen to get on the bike and notice there's a class that's about to be live that I might want to take. Or there's something that is very specific, a very specific class that's been hyped up, like Jen Sherman's Grateful Dead ride that I just wanted to experience live for the first time. But I know my wife, Jen, she really likes to appointment schedule her rides. And you know, every Sunday, you know, she, with Jen Sherman, there's a ride and she hops on it live, and you know, that's her motivation to get on the bike. And lately, as the community's grown and more of our friends have bikes, she'll schedule time with a friend to say, why don't we hop on the bike at the same time and ride together? And I know that's,
we've done that.
But they do it, you know.
Jen stole that from us. Jen stole that from us.
Yes, that's true. But, and I know she's used, sometimes we use a little bit of the built-in video chat feature, which I think is one thing they really need to improve upon and figure. I think it's a feature. I'd be shocked if more than 10% of the Peloton audience uses it on a regular basis. I don't know. What's your gut on that, Paul?
Well, Tim, when we discovered the video chat feature and it didn't work for us. Like, we tried it for four rides and we would, I think you used Twitter to contact Peloton and they were like, yeah, no one uses it. Like, that was like these, they have since made it better, but.
I think it's easier to put your phone next to the thing and FaceTime while you're on the bike than to power it through the bike for whatever reason. Now, there could be a world where it gets much, like if you look at the ESPN All for One, or you know, whatever ride where all the athletes were on it, if you could imagine you're riding with six of your friends and each one has its own tile, like a Zoom call, and you could see them all with their metrics, that could be really interesting. I think you could take the person-to-person video experience on the Peloton a lot of interesting ways for riding in communities. But once again,
if we're going to make this a suggestion box, I think, I don't necessarily need the video, but I would love to ride with you. And I know that you can get this somewhat in the here and now thing, but it's not real time, but like real time data of what you're doing, you know,
like a ghost ride, like a pace setter, a ghost, you know, like in running, you a lot of times when you train on a track against a ghost runner, right? That's your pace setter. You're trying to keep up with the ghost.
Right.
Kind of like that, where you just see where they are on a continuum and you're following that graph. Something like that.
Yeah. And again, they do have this to a degree. Like, I'm following you, I can look at, but I would say it's like it's more like clump data, like 10 seconds of data that
is
it's clumped.
Definitely not instantaneous. I would agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. But
otherwise your ability to hold cadence is phenomenal, Paul, because I'm like bouncing all over the place. And your cadence hasn't changed for 10, 20 seconds. And I'm like, whoa, man, this dude's steady.
And then I show you my graph after, which you're like, what is that? Looked a little bouncy there.
But yeah, so live rides does that motivate you? I just saw someone on Twitter that had recently gotten the bike and they were like, they had just taken their first live class. And he was like, his comment was, and I remember thinking this, and I might have tweeted this after my first live ride, was that my adrenaline was going. I performed like 10 or 15% better, hit a PR on my first live ride. This person mentioned the same thing. For me, that didn't continue. Like, now a live ride is really not different at all to me than an on-demand ride. I don't experience
doesn't feel any different to me.
Yeah.
I lean towards the on-demand because I got a full menu versus, you know, today we're serving, this is what you got to take. I will take a live class, you know, like you said, if I'm coming up, I'm like, oh, you know, they got a live class going and, you know, I like that. And instead of searching around trying to find it, I'll just take that in 15 minutes, warm up on the bike a little. But yeah, I don't need the shout out. I like the shout out. I've gotten two, I think, so far on the live rides that I have done. But I don't need that. And I would much rather take the ride that is better suited for me, like that I'm going to get my own enjoyment out of, versus chasing that leaderboard in a live scenario like that.
Yeah, I generally agree. One thing that I will say is a really cool experience. It takes it to a whole nother level. Jen and I have taken vacations to New York City, not to see Broadway shows, Paul, but specifically to go to the studio and ride in person on the bikes in the studio, obviously pre-pandemic, with some of our favorite instructors. And these meccas, these, you know, to the home studio are a real big deal. I mean, riders do it all the time. And that is definitely, to me, once you're riding consistently for a while and you've really become a part of the community, that's something I think every Peloton rider should try and do at some point, especially with the new studio in New York that they've built. And no, there haven't been any live classes there. They launched it right at the beginning of the pandemic. But once people are back in those studios, I think the experience is going to be even better, and would highly recommend anyone considering doing it to make a weekend vacation out of it, especially if you're in the Northeast. It's, you know, a long weekend is perfect. And most of the 30 minute classes that they have, 20 and 30 minutes, are free walk-in. You have to schedule, you know, your 45 minute classes. You have to get on, you know, well in advance and, you know, reserve your bikes and all that stuff. But, those 30 minute classes are just walk-in and, you know, free, which is pretty cool. So you can usually get a couple rides in a day, or a ride and a run on the tread or what have you, and make a little fitness journey out of it. And then everyone looks at you funny. Like, oh, you went to New York? What show did you see? Oh, I saw Matt Wilpers.
Yeah. Live on Peloton. It's funny that you mentioned that. I forgot about that with the 20 and 30 minute classes where walk on. If you go way back, I don't even know if he still does it, but there was one guy that did every single one of those classes. So every time you took an on-demand 30-minute or 20-minute class, he was always there on the same bike.
The longer hair.
He was, it looked like a tall guy, too. Like, it was just like, but he was literally there. He's just every single time he rode.
It is funny. I mean, the experience right now, I mean, I've almost forgotten what it's like to ride a ride with a studio audience, because it's been, you know, it's been a few months since we've had one. But I will say, and I once again, I speak glowingly about Peloton. I think what they've done during the pandemic has been, you know, really incredible from a business perspective and a content development perspective. They haven't missed a beat. They've pivoted a couple ways. And I think it's, you know, they've done it at a critical time for their business where more and more people need at-home solutions. I know my sister and her husband ordered a bike, I think, end of May, and it just came, you know, 2 months later, you know, in July. And so demand is obviously through the roof right now for their products and services. But they were caught in a spot where, you know, at first they just couldn't have a live audience in their studios. And so you're got instructors in front of in an empty studio just coaching to the camera, which is different for them, right? But they adapted and did it well. And then now all of a sudden the studio's shut down and they actually built studios in instructors' houses, right? They shipped them all the material and you know, all the all the all the audio and visual equipment. They had the people running, all the engineers running it from their computers remotely. And they broadcast live from their homes, which was, I actually thought, really cool. I felt like you, once again, you deepened your relationship with certain instructors that that taught those classes. So I thought that was both a lot of fun and a really innovative solution to a difficult problem.
And it really kind of takes the whole level of at-home fitness versus, you know, going to a traditional gym type of fitness. And this isn't to shit on gyms that are out there or whatnot, but, you know, one of the big complaints that you were hearing during the pandemic is gyms were not giving the money back. They were still taking their monthly fees where people could not go to the and utilize the facilities because it was part of their contract, and they probably had every right to do it. Peloton could have very easily said, we have all this on-demand content out there. We're shutting everything down. But that's not what they didn't, because they know that's not what the community wants. The community wants variety. They want new classes. It doesn't matter. It could be a 30-minute Power Zone endurance ride that, you know, there's, do a search. I mean, there's about 700 of them. On demand. But everyone wants a new one. Because, and again, I think it's a lot what you said in the beginning, very just tying it back to that. We feel a relationship with these people. We feel like they're training us. So when they're doing something new, they're speaking new stuff to us. And so the company did not abandon that, and they went out and they found a solution. And it is something that should be applauded from there.
Yeah, and well, I had another thought about that, but I totally forgot what it was. I have too many thoughts. I mean, I really think that they that the instructors, the relationship that you have with them, you look forward to your time with them, right? Like, and however you're going to get that. I remember what it was. It was that especially right now, as we're going through the pandemic, you actually turn to those rides to listen to what the instructors, like, how are they going to coach you through this? They realize that you have a change in your physical activity, your mental state, right? It's almost like they're part psychologist, they're part life coach, they're part, you know, mental trainer, physical trainer, all rolled into one. They're a sounding board. That you're not talking to them directly, but they're talking to you. And, you know, whether it be Black Lives Matter and the Speak Up ride that Toon Day did, the Pride rides that Peloton does, the community Together We Go Far rides where they bring everyone together and celebrate the community. The currency of what they're talking about in the moment and what they're feeling emotionally, I think that they've done a great job of marrying fitness with your mental state and the thought that, like, look, when fitness is an emotional journey for a lot of people, right? Like, you're pushing past limits. And that brings up emotions in you. And when you're in a time like we're in now, I think you have even more of that. And so I just think that the coaches have done a great job of navigating all that for the people that they're coaching. I can't say enough. And we've spent a lot of time on the bike, but I'll tell you that the yoga, the meditation, the strength, the outdoor running classes, the tread classes, you know, boot camp, they all are unique and valuable. I've done, you know, less of the boot camp classes, but I've enjoyed the ones I've done. The strength, I like them. I have found that I do have a tendency to injure myself a little bit if I'm doing the without good form, right? So let's say you're being coached to do some squats or things is a little bit differently than maybe you normally do, and the weight's a little heavier. You have to really be careful about form, and in not having a live coach coaching, like looking at your form, you might think you're doing it the right way, but you're actually a little off balance. You might tweak a muscle here or there. I've done that. So I do try and be careful with some of the strength classes. I think the yoga is excellent. I try and take a couple yoga classes a week as a part of my stretching and just kind of mentally to take a break. And I think the yoga instruction that they give is as good as anything online. I did a lot of YouTube yoga before, and I think these instructors and classes and the consistency of the teaching is awesome. It really helps you build your practice over a period of time. And I encourage people that have the bike but haven't tried these other things, the outdoor running coaching, like, try them. Give them a shot. Like, just throw, usually they're bite-sized. You can do it in 10, 20, 30-minute increments. Give it a try and see what fits, because I surprised myself, and, you know, I think the yoga was specifically something where I thought would be interesting, but I didn't realize that it would become a significant part of my kind of fitness program. So I would definitely try those things. And if you're just an app user, look, $20 a month, you get all of those classes plus the cycling, which you can do on your own spin bike or an indoor stationary bike. And I know it's not quite the same without the integrated metrics, but if you look at other fitness apps out there charging $7, $8, $10 a month, you're going to get a lot of value for that $20 a month if you use the breadth of classes that they offer. The value is there. Now it's just for you to go out and use it and you know, to its max. So those are my thoughts on the app experience. Sorry to get on the soapbox for a little while there.
No, it's fine. I mean, I think you're pretty much spot on. I've brought this strength training into my regimen now. I'm not a yogi, mainly because I can't bend at all. But
well, that's why you do it, Paul.
Yeah, I know, but it really hurts. I make weird noises. It a lot of whimpering. It's not that I haven't tried it. I'm just really not that good at it. So the strength training, you know, the thing I would say about the strength training, you know, I like it. It's fun. It reminds me a little bit of when I used to do CrossFit back in the days. I mean, not as extreme as that, but just a lot of different movements, you know, in a cycle, like kind of doing that. And I yes. like training like that. It keeps me motivated. It's fresh. I really work up a sweat in it. I would like some longer classes. Like, they have a lot of 30-minute classes, or a few 30-minute classes, but most are in the 10 to 20-minute range. I would like to see them
so
push
what
more.
What I end up doing there, Paul, yeah. What I end up doing a lot is I'll choose if I want to do, like, upper back and chest. If I want to focus on a muscle group, I'll pair together two or three classes in a row on that group. Or if I want to get full body, I'll do a 10-minute lower body, 10-minute upper body, 10-minute core, right, back to back to back.
Yeah, that really drives up your class take count, which is good.
Look, I've got over 1,300 classes taken now across the Peloton ecosystem. Yeah. But that's another thing.
And that's a warning, actually. I'm sorry to talk over you, but that's a warning for the people out there. Like, if you do listen to this podcast, you decide you want to get into the Peloton community, there will be people that complain that you take three 10-minute classes instead of one 30-minute class because they think they know you. Like, that's the weirdest part about this.
Let's talk a little bit about the community and where that happens, right? So Facebook would be like, so there's two types of Peloton community. One is the instructor's relationship with their users. I find most of that happens on Instagram. That seems to be their platform of choice. Facebook kind of secondary. I noticed they're building up a little slowly. I think they're going to start building up their YouTube content. I would expect more of that in the future. But Instagram seems to be the primary spot there. Facebook is where user-to-user interaction happens pretty, you know, consistently. There's a huge official Peloton members Facebook group. I think that's probably the one where you're getting most of that feedback from. It's huge. And so you get all sorts of types of people. Some people you'll agree with and some people you won't. As with general Facebook, there's a lot of stuff you just got to shake your head at and move on, right? And then there's a lot of relationships that, like, people you'll come to see on Facebook and then see on the leaderboard. And that creates that community. And then you can go into smaller groups within Facebook, Power Zone Pack, different PZP, different instructors groups. They've got Peloton groups for everything. Pelotons for moms, for dads, for people that like to drink, for people that like coffee, Peloton and coffee. Yeah, but whatever it is, you could probably find a Peloton and group on Facebook for you to make that experience a smaller, tighter community. But that's another reason why it is more than just a bike. And I think you'll hear people across Peloton say that, and I would agree. That's been my experience of it at this point.
No doubt. I'm glad you kind of pushed me over the edge to get one and get into the old Peloton community, because it's just a difference maker. It's a motivator every single day. I want to go back. There was about a 4-month period, it was pretty related, but it was a 4-month period where I was tired of the bike. Right. So everyone kind of goes through that. We talked about plateau, and I was constantly doing power zone training. So I just started running more, and I started doing more weight training. And that's just kind of the path that I wanted to go. I needed to get away from the bike. But here's the thing. Now I'm in love with the bike again. Over the last, since the pandemic is how I've really hopped on the bike. I'm doing close to 20 plus rides a month again. And that's the thing. It's like, you're not going to get burnt. You might get a little burnt out on it, but it's not something that's just going to, dry your clothes like, a lot of treadmills will or something like that you get. You will get back on that bike, because I did go through it. There was a period there I was probably doing like six to eight rides a month, which wasn't a lot for me. And just because I was just tired of it.
So, and let's talk about, you mentioned it's not a treadmill. Let's talk about the Peloton Tread for a second. I've experienced it in the studio. It's a pretty cool machine. It's also $4,000, which even if I was in the market for a treadmill, that would be a hard number to stomach if I could get a pretty good treadmill for $2,500, which I think you can. That said, being hooked by Peloton, if I was in the market for a treadmill, I probably would consider the Tread pretty significantly. I have heard rumors that they're coming out with a lower priced treadmill. I don't know what they'll take off of the one that they currently have from either. It's got a really big screen. Maybe they'll make the screen smaller, save money there. Maybe they change, some of the way it operates. It's a really good quality treadmill. It's slats, not belt, right? So if they go belt, maybe that saves some cost, and maybe they've done some consumer research that says that's the way they should go. I don't know. I think you can get the Tread experience with the app and a treadmill in ways that you, like a non-Peloton treadmill, in ways that you can't get with the bike and with the app and a non-Peloton bike. The metrics for power and running are not as universal and as needed when you can match speed and incline to a call out on the Peloton Tread and on almost any treadmill out there, right? So they're giving speed and incline call outs, and you can do that just as easily through the app. Right, you just miss the power, the leaderboard, the power metrics, but those are less meaningful in running. So I've really enjoyed using the Tread on my indoor running. When I was training at the Boston Marathon, I used it quite a bit. The only reason I wouldn't run out to replace my current treadmill with a Peloton Tread is I really enjoy running outside a lot more. Right, so I'll always default to running outside. So investing in something to run indoors isn't a priority, but maybe if I did, I would run indoors a lot more and I'd think differently about it. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting question.
Well, I mean, here's the question for you. You were a cyclist long before you got the Peloton. Do you ride?
Yeah.
Have you, I know you obviously ride the Peloton more than you ride outside just because of a time factor.
Yeah.
But do you find that yourself replacing a lot of your outdoor riding with the Peloton?
Absolutely. For me, absolutely. I think there's some mitigating factors. I mean, I can say before the Peloton, I did train on an indoor stationary bike and luckily had some technology. Zwift is a software that's basically like it translates your bike riding on the trainer with power to a virtual environment. And you're riding with other people riding virtually like a video game almost. It's pretty cool. They have it for running as well. I'd love it if they and Peloton merged and all of a sudden you could ride the Zwift courses, which like you could ride in New York City or the Tour de France courses and all this stuff. And on the Peloton, that'd be pretty cool, but I don't think that's likely to happen. That said, so I did a lot of indoor stationary riding and then a lot of outdoor riding. I crashed my bike, broke my collarbone. My confidence in my bike handling skills went way down outside. My confidence in the quality of the roads in New England went way down. And I found that I really didn't enjoy outdoor riding as much as I wanted to. And it's much more time consuming to get a really good, you know, to go for a couple hour bike ride, you know, 30, 40 miles. It takes up a big chunk of time. And so I found myself riding the Peloton more and more and more and enjoying it more and more. So I haven't been riding outside as much. But I think that's a very, you know, personal, like, there are personal reasons. I don't know that. I think a lot of people that ride the Peloton then buy a road bike for the first time and then start to ride outside and fall in love with that, you know, outdoor cycling as a result, because they're stronger and more capable in their cycling skills.
Yeah, if you could take every car off the road, or just have like a bike only, like I would cycle outside. Like, cause I went through that. I got the bike. I was like, now I was talking to you. I want this bike. And then I just thought about it. And I was like, I'm too scared to kind of ride outside. Like, cause I see these bicycles all the time. I see cars almost miss them. And I'm just like, I just 2 weeks ago stopped wearing a helmet on my Peloton. So, so I finally feel comfortable enough on the stationary bike.
You're not afraid of falling off anymore.
that I really shouldn't be out on the road doing that. No, but it is one of those things. Like, that's what this bike does. Like, that's what the Peloton does. Like, it makes you think, like, oh, my God, I can go out and I can ride with these people on Saturday mornings, or they go on these long rides and stay out. Like, and it's something that I want to do. And then it's just, again, you have a fear factor, you know. We're both in our mid-40s.
It's risk-reward these days,
yeah,
for me, Paul.
Yeah. I kind of look at it like that. And I'm like, I'm good enough with the bike.
I training for the Boston Marathon, I don't know that I would have been able to conceive of it, to accomplish it, to do it without the Peloton coaching on the run side. So whether it be on the tread and Bex Gentry and Rebecca Kennedy, two of the tread coaches that I really like. Matt Wilpers obviously does both. But to the outdoor coaching, you know, outdoor audio runs where you've got audio running in your ear, which I wish they would do more of. I know they've got to prioritize. They've only got so many instructors doing so many things, but I've re-listened to so many run cues on that, you know, because the library isn't large enough for me. But I love being coached through intervals, running and doing different types of workouts, and or being coached to prepare mentally for a long run, do form checks, all that kind of stuff via, you know, the in-ear coaching has been great, along with good music, again, that you don't have to program yourself. So that's been a great experience. But I don't know that I would have crossed the finish line if I didn't have that coaching, because I didn't have other coaching. I used a training plan from Matt Wilper's website, and now they have marathon coaching in their app. I used their runs as, you know, my primary way of thinking through how I was going to coach myself through the marathon. And, you know, in the same ways, some of the long, you know, half Ironman triathlons I've done, it's been a lot of the same thing. The coaching that they give on the bike translates to real life. You know, when you're out there and you're mentally unsure of, you know, can I do this? You think back to your experience breaking through certain plateaus on the bike, being coached through it by the instructors, and you're able to do it because you know you've done it in the past, and it gives you a confidence and you know, a level of kind of mental strength, and you know, so I thank the instructors for having given that ability, you know, to me to maximize the ability that I have, because I don't know that I would have had that confidence doing it all on my own.
And again, getting good credit to the company as well for being, you know, as things develop, and I'm, you know, I don't do any of the running through them, because when I'm on a run, I'm listening to a podcast. That's just kind of how I do it. And I figure I know how to run. And I don't take running as serious as what I'm doing it. But let's take, for example, you and I both, again, we've talked about it quite a lot, love the Power Zone training. Well, back in the day, when I was a boy, you used to have to print out your Power Zones and on this Excel spreadsheet and tape them to the monitor and be able to run. But then the company realizes, like, okay, this is giving value. Like, people are really using this to measure their thing, and they just built it into the software, which then, of course, crashed my monitor or tablet, and then I had to spend more money. So it's a catch-22, one way that you look at it, but that's what they do. They're taking this, because Power Zone, at least I'd like to think, I don't know for certain, but I think Matt Wilpers went to Peloton and he said, I want to introduce Power Zone training as part of this program. And they said yes. And then it got a following. And then that following really wanted, like, they were tired of printing out their Power Zones, putting them all up there, trying to keep it, sweating on it, having to rip it off. And they just built it into the software. And good companies do that. Good technology companies do that. And that's why you're not investing. I mean, you are investing in the bike, you're investing in that, but you're also investing into the company that they're going to make it worth, whether it's the $20 just for the app version, or the $40 a month or whatever it is that we pay for the integrated version. It's going to be they're going to bring that value to it.
Yeah, I look, when you compare the costs of the bike, the subscription, and all the things you get to it, and if you cut your gym membership, you'll break even after. I've run the numbers before. If you amortize the cost of the bike plus the subscription over a couple years payback, if you cancel your gym membership, you've basically paid for it. And I think you can do that. I think you can get everything you get at a gym through these classes if that fits your personality, right? If you need to go to the gym for that motivation, well, this might not be for you.
But right, and keep in mind too that if you belong to a decent gym, and let's say that decent gym is $40 a month, well, guess what? If that decent gym has a spin class, you know what's extra? That spin class. That's not included.
Usually $20 or $30
extra. Right.
Right, yeah. Like each class. Yeah. Now you got unlimited class. That's the other thing we haven't really talked about. Neither you and I went to spin classes before we got the bike. A lot of people that get the bike have been going to SoulCycle, to you know, to Flywheel, to their gym, to the Equinox, to whatever. All these classes for a long time. They like spinning, and that's what brings them to the bike. But neither you, like you are, my first spin class ever was on the Peloton. I hadn't been to, then I went to a non-Peloton based, you know, spin class, and I was like, whoa, this is a little weird. And then, you know, you go to the studio and you have the best of the Peloton studio, you get the best of both worlds. You have the live experience with the you know, Peloton instructors in the class style that you're used to, and it's like, oh, this is really cool. But yeah, I think I forget where I was going with that. I got sidetracked with a different question, a different thought, Paul, that I think we can start to wrap up on is, so Peloton.
Maybe you should take, I have a cognitive test that I could send you.
I aced that cognitive test, Paul. Like, so well, better than anyone has ever aced that test before.
I struggled on the last six questions.
So here's where, like, Peloton's going to keep developing, right? They're going to keep developing their software. They're going to keep developing their content programming. They're going to keep developing their hardware, both the hardware in categories they currently exist in and continue to grow the categories that they might exist in. So already a lower cost tread is probably going to happen very soon. the rowing market. You've already got knockoffs like that are building Peloton-like rowing machines. You've heard.
Well, actually, let's stop there. Let's stop right there, real quick, because I want to get. So, are you calling? Let's say that first company, because I don't want to say anyone's name, that came out with like a Peloton-like rower as a fraud company. I don't know much about it, but
But it depends. There's a couple different. One was like Hydro was
okay. Well, you'll say the name, right? So, like, I look at them and I say that's very Peloton-like. Like, I don't know the product, so I'm
no. I wouldn't say that they stole patent. Like that they probably. I mean, if Peloton had a patent on something, they would have sued them, right? Yeah. Like Peloton won patent lawsuits against Flywheel made that like Flywheel built bikes for and whatever. I think it's the connected. So the tablet plus. The hardware and there's some core kernel in there that Peloton has a patent for. You can work your way around it specifically by using an iPad and an app instead of an integrated experience. Like there's a way to build that experience like Echelon has, right? You'll often see that ad for that. I think they're outside of Peloton's patent, just barely. Flywheel got stuck inside of it and basically had to shut down their at-home studio or at home bike model and actually gave everyone a Peloton that had bought their bike as a part of the settlement, which is like wild. But there's still others that are able to exist. I don't know where the line is. And I don't think anyone like Hydro, I wouldn't expect. I think they said Peloton did this for the bike. We can do this for a rowing machine. And they built something. Now, the trick is Peloton already has the content side. Like the quality of the content, the distribution, the programming, the music licensing, like they've got that infrastructure nailed. That's what's going to be hard for all these other companies to do well and legally and with, in a profitable business model. So Peloton can expand into other categories, I think, easier because they have that unified content delivery base, right?
Or they can buy Hydro. Like that's kind of like what I think. Why aren't like they want to put a rower on the market? Why not just because that looked like a solid machine to me?
Well, but I think they would look at it and say either I don't need to buy it because I can build my own, or I don't know. Build or buy is I guess you'd have to know a little bit more about the financials of it. Mm-hmm. I would say that they could probably easily ramp manufacturing of a rower and stuff once they. I would think that's a category that they will get into. Now, the question is, like, what do the classes look like? Is it someone sitting on a rower? Do you emulate someone out on the water?
That's what Hydro does. Right?
Yeah, and so, that's more the question for Peloton is, how do you want to maximize that experience, right? And I think that's probably why they went into running first. And I've heard, I do know that the treadmill market, so the cycling market at home, I don't know what the number is, but let's say it's X. The treadmill market is X times like 10. So if they take a share of the treadmill, that's why they went into tread so quickly. Like the market is so much bigger that they could take a sliver. It's a lot of money for them. The rowing machine market is smaller, right?
The rowing machines market is smaller than the bike market, yeah. But here's the thing that I would say.
They might not go that direction because of that.
Well, here's the thing that I would say is like the treadmill market's 10 times that of the cycle market, say.
And we're making that number up, but it is some multiple larger.
Yeah. I'm saying for the use of this. But I would say maybe it was 20 before Peloton came out.
Like, well, that's true.
The cycle market has increased because
Peloton grown the market.
I would never have bought a stationary bike for my house unless it was for that technology. And that's where I'll say, like, they're not growing they can grow market share. I mean, they can get market share, more market share of the treadmill market. But the people that were going to buy a treadmill were already people that were going to buy a treadmill. People aren't going,
but that's where they say it's easier for me as a business to go steal part of that pie than to create a new pie, right? So, let's talk. So a rower has been something that I think has been talked about for a long time and I think it's a realistic possibility. It's somewhere they may branch off to, but you know, what about, you know, internet connected weights? I know there is a technology around, right? But that to me, if Peloton came and said, here's a weight rack of dumbbells and kettlebells, right? We're going to measure reps. We're going to keep track of weights. We're going to, like, you're going to see measurable success over time. I would go out and buy that set.
So would I.
If it was Peloton. Some third party, I don't know that I would. If it was Peloton, I think I would.
Because you know they can deliver on it. And that's exactly how I feel. Like I wouldn't buy the tread myself. Number one, because I have a leg injury that acts up every once in a while, and it's just like, that's a $4,000 mistake that I can't really risk. But a rower, like, I wouldn't buy a regular rower probably, but I'd probably buy the, now that I have the bike and those metrics, I'd probably buy the Peloton rower when it's ready to come out. And I don't know, like, if they come out with something like the mirror or something like that, like, you know, yeah. that more personalized training, within the home, I'd buy anything that they put out, or at least give it a shot. If it's completing my home, like my home gym all around, you know, so I can have variety.
I'll give you an example. Like, I'm surprised that they had, like, so TRX would be to me a great partnership and extension to teach classes as a part of their subscription, right? If they could partner with TRX to do resistance, you know, like the suspension training, or come out with a Peloton branded TRX, and, you know, like, because I know there's patents there, and like, that's another complicated little legal market that I don't know enough about, but that's the type of equipment that you can have in your home that you could do so much with, but is better with instruction. And I know you watch a lot of the instructors when they're training outside of Peloton, right, in their own gyms, and they're doing their work. They're often using the TRX suspension trainers, so I know that they have expertise in it. That I think that would be a really interesting, you know, like, class extension. But once again, where's the money, right? Mm-hmm. It'd be in selling the suspension trainers that are branded Peloton, possibly. I don't know. But I do think that, like, they've been very smart about how they have expanded so far. They haven't gone too broad too quick. They've been very targeted. But it'll be interesting to see just how much they take over in your home fitness-wise. Because, look, once you're on the journey with them, like you said, you'd buy the rower, I'd buy the tread, I'd buy the weights. I'm in with them. I would say, as far as brands that I associate with on a daily basis, Apple, Dunkin' Donuts, Peloton. those are probably the three brands that I associate with the most in my life right now. And, you know, I think that's a pretty impressive place for a company like Peloton to be when they are just at the tip of the products that they can come out with. Like, I think the future is huge.
And that's the exciting part about it is, again, we've been going a little longer, but, you know, I just kind of wonder, for like me 3 years, you 5 years, we've seen the growth of this company and what they're delivering. 3 years ago, I think 5 years ago, we were paying the same price monthly. We're getting 10 times more, 10 times more content options for the same amount of money.
And I'll say, Paul, that's for the fam, like that $40 a month, my wife and I, our subscriptions, our kids, when they get a little older, then they want to do, like, that's all in that subscription. So it's a household subscription when you're doing right. It, you know, like, so I think that's that's also an important thing to consider when you're laying out the financing of it, in your head. So I know we've gone long, and I would bet this won't be our only Peloton-related, you know, one question in our long future of the One Question podcast. Maybe we'll get more specific into one thing, like what's your favorite class, or if you have any Peloton fans, if you have any questions that you would like Paul and I to discuss in a future One Question podcast, hit us up in the Facebook group. We'll post this. And for everyone else, you know, you can, well, Paul, first, What's your username on Peloton for any of the fans that are listening and want to follow you? I'm Mr. underscore D underscore on Peloton, so you all can follow me there. Paul, if you care to give out your username, feel free.
Mine is Big Testa, my last name, underscore cycles. So it's Big Testa Cycles.
Of course. Big Testa, because you cycle and you're Big Testa Cycles. I remember you were so proud of yourself, just that you could get Matt Wilpers to say something close to Big Testicles.
He said Big Testa.
I don't think it ever manifested the way you had in your head when you set the name out. Has it? But give us a follow on Peloton. You can also follow the One Question Podcast at One Question Pod on Twitter, One Question Podcast on Facebook, or One_Question_Podcast on Instagram. And of course, I'm hiding this at the very end of the episode, so I don't know who's going to get here. But you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Breaker, on almost any podcast platform that you can think of. But you can also go to our anchor.fm site and search for One Question Podcast. And if you want to leave a voice comment, there's a little message box there. You can leave a comment that we can play on the air about this question and reaction or any future question that you'd like us to answer. I believe you can also donate money to us if you care to. I mean, maybe we gave you 25 cents worth of entertainment this episode. So a quarter, hey, every quarter helps. Enough quarters, and we pay for our monthly Peloton membership, Paul.
There we go.
And until then, that's been this episode of One Question, and we look forward to answering your further questions down the line. You ain't seen nothing yet.